Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Monday, May the 2nd. And as we like to do on Mondays, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. I don't know if it's me, but time seems to be flying by. Here we go, the 2nd of May. We're 6 months away from the midterm elections, if you can believe that. Bill, let's welcome Bill on our show. How are you, Bill? How's the weather in New York?
Well, I'll tell you, Silvio, I'm looking outside, which sometimes gives you a good idea. It's kind of gloopy in New York today, but that's just my observation. I haven't yet heard what the Ministry of Truth in Washington has to say about this. When I find out, I will make sure that you know, because we want to know the truth. We don't want anything hidden by dirty windows, you know?
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, the Ministry sure. of Truth has a great tradition in the old Soviet Union. So we want to make sure that we bring here all of the great traditions of the Soviet Union, Bill.
Well, absolutely. Why should we not borrow the best from other cultures? That's what
That's
I say.
It.
And, here's a message from the Ministry of Truth. weather in White Plains, New York, beautiful sunshine brought about by air cleaning devices bought by the Biden administration. Well, I was wrong. That's it. Now we know the truth.
Well, and I'm sure that this was all brought to you by the program that was signed earlier in the year, you know, about Build Back Better. I'm sure that's what financed all of this. I'm sure of that. And the Ministry of Truth will make sure that you know that, Bill, by telling you every day that your life is better because of the Biden administration, Bill.
No question about it. And if you looked at the clips that were shown on television of the young woman who is heading it, you know that we will not only be given the truth, we will have it sung to us by her beautiful voice and her accurate statements. I'm excited about the Ministry of Truth. No more need for research. No more need for thinking. We can now devote ourselves entirely to pursuing the truth and also for defending the Walt Disney Company.
Absolutely, absolutely. After all, you know, President Biden went on that correspondence dinner the other night and took a shot at his predecessor and the Republicans and the Disney Company. And Bill, I didn't think he was funny at all. That's supposed to be a night when people are supposed to be funny. I mean, I shouldn't say they're supposed to be funny, but in the past I've heard presidents be a heck of a lot more funny than this one. So I don't know.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if they wrote the wrong lines for him. I don't know. Maybe the teleprompter was not working, but I don't know. The idea of a president laughing and enjoying a laugh when the host is making fun of inflation, that's a bit tone deaf for me, Bill.
Yeah. Well, I am... a person who knows how to lower his standards when necessary, and I'm just glad he found the place. You know, I'm just glad he found it and got there safely. All the rest will be topping on the cake. Oh, you can't have cake. It's not allowed.
Cake may actually violate the latest climate change.
No question about that,
the baking of the cake and all of that may be a threat to climate change.
Absolutely. I mean, I believe that if the world comes to an end, it's going to come to an end as a result of seven layer cakes. That's what I believe. And the Ministry of Truth agrees with me. They said, yes, this is a serious problem. Except at the White House. They're not included. So.
No. Of course, the problem with the seven-layer cake, Bill, is that are we covering enough genders if we do seven? I thought there were 52 genders, so I thought it had to be more than seven.
I'm afraid you're right. Yeah, I'm afraid. Now I'm going to get reported to the Ministry of Truth. You see?
That's right.
The idea is not to say anything. Not to say anything. You know, it's really weird that we're talking
about this
at a time
when
a war is going on, and we're talking about this, and it indicates just how low things have slipped in this country, that we can talk about it. You know, during World War II, we had something called the Office of War Information. And if I recall it correctly, and I did not research this before we went on the air, during the war, the Office of War Information was shut down, I believe. And I believe it was shut down because of the fear that it was becoming too much of a propaganda ministry. And that, you know, this was in the middle of World War II when people probably wouldn't have objected to a propaganda ministry, but there was still sensitivity. But the reality is that we are living in the most unusual times I've seen in my lifetime and the most frightening, because this country is absolutely going down the drain. We have the most basic principles of American democracy under challenge by people who believe that democracy exists only when they win. I mean, look at the assaults on freedom. Look at the assaults on freedom of the press that we've heard just in the last 3 days, that it's a male thing or a white male thing, not just a male thing, but a white male thing. Gee, I didn't know that freedom of the press was something designed by white men for their own protection, but now I know. So I'll be alerted next time somebody gives a speech I disagree with.
Absolutely. You know, Bill, I thought we had spoken enough last week about Twitter, but it's just like it never stops. The attacks on Leon or whatever, Elon Musk, the attacks on him, the attacks on I guess free speech. You've got people. Now, some of these people may find themselves in legal trouble, like Joey Reid over at MSNBC. She goes over the top every single time, and I really hope that they take her to court for what she said about young black children. Apparently, Governor DeSantis had some young black children with him when he signed that law, and Joey Reid thought that was abuse of children, and this fellow Jack Brewer, who I've seen on TV many times, he wants an apology or he's going to sue her. I hope he does. Yes. I would really like to see, Bill, it's not vengeance, but I'd just like to see one of these guys get sued in front of a jury and have the jury just destroy them, Bill.
I hope so, if the jury has enough sense to destroy them. You know, the problem with lawsuits is that you can have the best case, but a lot of these people on the political left search around for Obama-appointed judges, knowing that they'll get some backing, and they know that the press will be on their side as well. So I hope that she gets sued also. But I am apprehensive about the outcome because we are in such weird times. Harvard was sued, Harvard University, for discriminating against Asian students. It was perfectly evident that they were doing it. But they found an Obama-appointed judge to twist things around and make them the winner of the lawsuit, and so they can keep on discriminating against Asian students. We are living in tough times. We're living in frightening times, and my concern is that the institutions of the United States have been so damaged in the last 4 or 5 years by the political left and by a press that refuses to cover the left correctly, that I can't be sure of justice being done in an American courtroom.
That's right. Well, I would like to see Joey Reid get sued, and I hope she loses. Not because I have anything against her. I don't know the lady, but she is so outrageous every day on television. The clips that I see, because in the interest of full disclosure, I don't see her show, but I see these clips that appear from her show. And she is just so outrageous. And it really makes me wonder, how can NBC, in good conscience, allow that to go on the air? I guarantee you they wouldn't do it the other way, Bill. Imagine if a white host or hostess or whatever the word is, moderator, was saying that the other way. It wouldn't be allowed, Bill. So that's what makes it – to me, it's obscene. I don't care what direction it goes, Bill.
Well, I fully agree with you, and it is remarkable to see how the television industry, the television networks, have declined. Things like that she said would never have been allowed 50 years ago. It would have been cut out by a responsible editor. Today, they say anything they wish to say. They hurt anybody they wish to hurt. It's a depressing time. There is some blowback. There is some fight back going on around the country. But the only way we're going to fundamentally solve some of the problems we have today is through free elections in which the people of the United States get their way, not a social class or a political class. And I think it's possible it can still happen. But, you know, as I was saying to an associate last night, we can depend on elections as long as the elections are clean. And that, I think, may be the next great dilemma in American life. Are our elections clean? Now, when President Trump raised questions about his defeat, people laughed at him. He didn't really present enough evidence. But people who know politics knows that voter fraud goes on all the time. And the issue is how much of it is there. Is there enough to swing elections, or is it just a couple of people here and there? The press won't cover the subject, not seriously. There is a new film out, I believe, by Dinesh D'Souza, which kind of demonstrates that corruption did take place in the 2020 election. But you've got to fight your way through a whole barrier of individuals who are on the other side who have no problem at all with what's going on in the country, and it's tough to do so, even if you have a good case in court.
Yeah. Well, this movie, 2,000 Mules, I guess that's the name of it, I have not seen it. It's been recommended by a couple of friends to see it, and I will. But if I was a member of the press and I was skeptical about election fraud, what I would do is that I would interview the maker of the movie, and I would challenge what he's saying. I would say, okay, these photos or videos that you have, what do they mean? And I would challenge him rather than simply say, oh, you're just making things up. That's what bothers me most about, you know, many people in the media who they will refuse to talk about it, and I just don't believe that's the role of the press. I mean, the role of the press, as I've always believed it, is to be skeptical and curious. And if something like this comes up, well, be skeptical, be curious, find out what it is, and then after you can prove that the movie is full of crap, then tell us it's full of crap. But just don't write off the whole thing without looking into it, Bill.
I fully agree with you. The fact is these young journalists, many, not all by any means, but many, define things differently than we do. They define democracy, for example, I think I just said it, as the situation that exists when their side wins. They define journalism not as reporting the news, but as improving the society along the ideological lines that we believe in. And they really do believe in these things. They think they're performing a great service. They think they performed a great service when they knocked Trump out of office. And they don't understand or don't care about the traditional separation in a good newspaper between the news pages and the editorial pages. They believe everything should be an editorial as long as it leads to social progress. And then they have a definition of social progress, if they do have one at all, that usually is ridiculous.
Yeah. It reminds me, Bill, back in 2012 when President Obama was reelected, I remember seeing a cartoon. President Obama's reelection numbers were in the popular vote actually very similar or very close to President Bush in 2004 when he was reelected. They were roughly between 50 and 51% for both in the reelection, not the first time. And there was a cartoon one time saying how when President Bush was reelected, they said it was a very close election, and yet when Obama was reelected, it was a landslide. And now the Electoral College was different, of course, because Obama won New York in California, and that gave him 75, 80 votes or whatever. So that was the big difference in the Electoral College. But the popular vote was not that much different. And yet the one election was seen as a tight reelection, and the other election was seen as as an easy reelection. And to me, that is just bias. I mean, that's simply ignorance or bias. I don't know how else to describe it, Bill.
Well, I suspect bias is the answer. I think ignorance is also a factor because we really can't be sure that people coming into journalism today have any real background in history. The educational systems in many cases have declined to the point, well, it was pointed out many, not recently, but years ago, that you could major in English at Harvard and not take a course in Shakespeare. I mean, the decline in basic standards has been dramatic. So some of it may be ignorance, and of course, ignorance is bliss. Many people who are ignorant of things don't know they're ignorant of them. So yes, it could be that as well, but I'm very frightened by all these wonderful predictions that we're getting that it's going to be a Republican landslide in November. First of all, that's 6 months away. That's about four lifetimes in politics. I'm also concerned by the fact that if enough cheating goes on in enough congressional districts or states, it may not be a landslide at all. In fact, it may be very, very close. These races tend to tighten toward the end anyway. And with what goes on in some states, I mean, I wouldn't trust the voting commission or whatever they call it in some of the red states of this country. We've seen what happens. I know that several states, the vote counts were very suspicious. Of course, the elections officials in those states swear by them. They say, oh, that's an accurate count. But we know from the experience in American history that elections are stolen, that big city political machines produce votes. This is common sense. The question is, how many do they produce?
Yeah, I think you meant blue states. I think you meant blue states. You said red
blue states.
And
yes,
you had me scared there for a minute, but blue states is what you mean. Well, the interesting thing the other day, there was an expert who was saying that it's difficult for the Republicans to pick up 50 or 60 seats for the simple reason that there aren't that many open seats anymore, or there aren't that many competitive seats. So what could very well happen is you'll pick up 30 or 35, which would be a good night, and end up with maybe a margin of plus 25 or 30 for the Congress. That's still a pretty good number, but it's not the days where you could have, like, you know, 50, 60, 70 swing. Now, that could happen, but I'm thinking more it's going to be about 25 or 30, and then on the Senate side, that's where we may see a surprise. You know, when you see the senator from New Hampshire, the lady who's caught up in a very tough fight, my goodness, she sounds like a Republican these days, Bill. She wants more energy production.
Right.
She goes down to the border and has a campaign ad done by the border talking about how bad things are. That says a lot to me that these people are really concerned about the election, Bill.
They are. Now, what the people like that do, that's Maggie Hassan in New Hampshire, who is facing a very difficult reelection. But what they do is they move to the center for the campaign, and then when they get reelected, they go back to Washington and do exactly what they've been doing before, going to the left. And that is what frustrates me. I'd like to see more moderate Democrats around, but they really don't exist that much anymore. I'm apprehensive over these predictions. I keep on saying to our readers at Urgent Agenda that you have to realize that the only election that counts, the only poll that counts, is the one on Election Day. And people have to get out to vote. They have to send in their absentee ballots on our side. They have to recognize the fact that these polls have often proved to be inaccurate, or at least inaccurate enough to switch the election, that there will be a certain amount of vote tampering, and the key right now is turnout. If the American people turn out the way we want them to, the election can go very strongly in our favor. If they don't, you can have a surprise in the wrong direction. And this you know there's an old line in politics: fight every election as if you're 20 points behind. And that's a good line,
right?
And it's good advice. That's what
No, you're right. I mean, it's like you don't want to assume, to use a baseball analogy, you don't want to assume victory. You know, you want to get the 27 outs and then celebrate.
That's right.
That's the way this is. But I'll give you an early sign of what may be in Texas in November. There is a special election in South Texas. There are three districts in South Texas on the eastern side of Texas. In other words, El Paso would be the west, McAllen closer to the Gulf or closer to Louisiana, that eastern part of the state. And there are three districts on the border that right now the Republicans have three ladies who are running, very good candidates who are running. And right now there's a special election because one of the Democrats who had that seat decided to retire early and pursue a business career. And right now the Republican lady is winning in that poll by 4 points.
Mm.
So if that were to hold, that would be a flip in a very important part of the state where there are other, there are two more districts. One of them is Cuellar's district where he's fighting a runoff, but there could be, and I say could be, three Republican women winning three of those districts, and all three are Hispanic women winning those three districts, and that would really be an earthquake, Bill. That would really be a shake up, an earthquake, whatever number you want to give the earthquake. That would be huge. There's an editorial a column in the Wall Street Journal about how the Democrats are turning Texas red. They were working on turning it blue, but their policies are actually turning it more red than before. That's true in South Texas. I mean, I'll go out on the limb right now, Bill, and say that the Republicans are going to win at least two of those districts. Cuellar may hold on in his district because he's well-respected and he's more anti-Biden than you and I. But the other
yes.
two, I think the Republicans are going to win, which would be a real shock that two Republican ladies would win those districts, Bill. That would really be a shock. And it would also be, I think, a view to the future of the party being more Hispanic, Bill.
Yes. I'm glad you brought up the issue of the Hispanic vote because everybody's talking about it. We see articles about it. The fact is, you mentioned these trends in the Hispanic community a year ago to me on one of these programs.
That's right.
And you talked about generational change, that a new generation is growing that wants to wear Brooks Brothers suits, not Che Guevara T-shirts. And also the basic values of many Hispanic communities is more similar to the values of the Republican than the Democratic Party. And I do think we're seeing in the polls the beginnings of a political revolution. If these polls prove to be accurate and the Republicans actually take the vote, I mean, get a majority of the votes this November, that is a political earthquake.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. And Ivan, what I had told you before and have had seen coming was on the area of values, not so much economics, but in the area of values, you know, abortion, issues like that, where the Hispanic community is very conservative. But I think what really broke the camel's back is the price of gasoline and everything else.
Oh, yes.
Just made things, you know, made things very bad. Also, some of these anti-energy policies don't make a lot of sense in a state like Texas, Bill, where energy is a big employer and a big source of revenue for Texas. So I think overall, you know, this had been cooking for quite some time, but a few policies of the Biden administration have accelerated this, and I argue the border is another big factor because there's great dissatisfaction on the border. This chaos on the border, Bill, as you've seen the videos and you've seen the segments on television, people being interviewed down there. I mean, these are small communities, many of these towns. I saw a film on there, or a video, a news segment, I should say, of a person, a Hispanic person in Del Rio, saying we have a population of, he was saying that, I'm paraphrasing, but he said we have a population of maybe 30,000 people in Del Rio, and there's 15,000 Haitians on the other side of the river. If they came over, how are we going to take these people? You know, how are we going to absorb these people?
Sure. We can't. They just don't care. They believe on the left that this will be a new resource for the Democratic Party, that these people will be grateful for what the Democratic Party did for them and will always vote Democratic. That's all they care about. I mean, the recklessness is breathtaking. It's just breathtaking. And the lying is breathtaking when the director of Secretary of Homeland Security says, we inherited a broken immigration system. No, they didn't. They inherited an immigration system that was working, and the borders were secure. And they wrecked it, and they wrecked it on behalf of the hard leftists in the Democratic Party, and now we have a really horrible situation, and it's going to get worse because there are a certain number of criminals have been admitted to the country. I suspect a certain number of foreign agents have been admitted to the country, and these things will turn up later under very tragic circumstances.
Yes, and another factor too, Bill, that is very unpopular in South Texas. I have a friend, George Rodriguez, who knows the Border Patrol people very well. And the Border Patrol is very angry with the Biden administration because of the way they've covered or what they've said about the Border Patrol. Remember the
sure.
Border Patrol
oh, yes.
agent on the horse? This man
yes.
was
oh,
demonized.
Yes.
And it turned out he wasn't doing anything wrong, but he was demonized. Now, I guarantee you that that man on the horse has a wife, a brother, a sister, a mother, and a father that who are not going to vote Democrat just because of that. And you can multiply that by many more. So that's where, you know, this administration has completely lost. And I think you mentioned another point, too, and that is that it's a different generation of Hispanics. I think you're right. I think they're more interested in the American dream and having their own business. And they see that being threatened by these policies, these economic policies. Look, inflation is impacting everybody, Bill. It's impacting you and it's impacting me. We went to Houston over the weekend for a family get together, and Houston is, you know, 300 miles. And we had to fill up the tank. It was $54 to fill up
sure.
the tank. I said to myself, I thought we were going out to an expensive dinner, Bill. I haven't spent $54 to fill up my tank in my whole life.
That's right. That's right. And they are trying to blame the oil companies. Well, that's always on the Democratic Party,
yes.
the big bugaboo of the oil companies. And they're trying to blame the war in Ukraine. They're trying to blame everything, anybody but themselves. They are
right.
the ones who caused this. When President Trump left office, this country was energy independent. And we were actually a surplus producing nation. Now we are not energy independent. Now we are in bad shape. But they know the press will be on their side. This is one of the great sins of modern America, and that's the corruption of the press. I don't think we realize yet the amount of damage this can do.
That's right. No, I think exactly right. The good news is, at least based on the polling data, if you believe the polling data, is that most Americans or significant majorities are blaming Biden policies, according to the polling data that we see. So it's working,
yes.
but it's not working on the majority of the population. We're going to take a little break, Bill, when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Let's get back to our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, I got a little surprise for you here. One of the great, I'm not going to say, maybe not one of the great Americans, but one of the most controversial Americans of the 20th century passed away 50 years ago today. And that was the great J. Edgar Hoover, director of the FBI,
yes.
who died on this day in 1972. So that's 50 years ago. And I was reading a little bit about his life today. He was so he's been dead now longer than he was director of the FBI, which is pretty amazing. He was director of the
yeah.
FBI for 48 years. But I thought the most interesting thing about his life is that in 1951 he was offered the position of commissioner of baseball. I mean, the owners went to him and said, you know, Mr. Hoover, we'd like to make you the commissioner of baseball. And he said, no, I'd rather stay in the FBI, Bill. So I don't know. I thought
yeah.
that was fascinating. What if Hoover
it
had
is.
Become the commissioner of baseball? That would have been very interesting, Bill.
It would have been very interesting, especially if under his baseball regime he developed techniques for spying on the other teams. And
yeah, stealing the signs would have become an art under J. Edgar Hoover as commissioner.
Well, you know, it's very interesting that you bring up the issue of J. Edgar Hoover. I have to say, this will sound terribly cynical. He probably died at the right time because he had become so controversial that I think the rest of his life would have been misery had he lived on. I edited a story at the New York Times on Hoover, written by our Washington bureau chief, Tom Wicker, that was beautifully written because Wicker did not choose the easy way out in writing the piece. He chose the journalism way out, which was he began by listing all the accomplishments of J. Edgar Hoover at the FBI, all the things he had done for American law enforcement, and we immediately realized we were dealing with the journalist who knew how to tell the truth. That the story of Hoover was not one-sided, but a mixed story, and that he did contribute a great deal. Once he finished that, of course, he had to deal with some of the controversies around Hoover. Hoover was a great man who probably stayed too long, probably wore out his welcome a little bit, did a few things he probably shouldn't have done, but he did an enormous amount for law enforcement in the United States, for forensics. He did a tremendous amount in the war against the Nazis. He broke the Ku Klux Klan. He was not as up to date on racial matters as he should have been, and he probably was not as up to date on organized crime as he should have been. But it's on the scales of justice, I would have to rate him as a positive in the sense that he formed a great investigative organization and brought into the federal government techniques they had never used before, and also set a standard for behavior, which wasn't always followed, I'm sorry to say, but was a very, very high standard. A mixed picture, mostly positive, but one of the most interesting men in recent American history.
Yes, and what amazes me looking at it, you know, looking back at it now, is how he could have stayed on that job from 1924 to 1972. I mean, I don't know of any other bureaucrat other than a Supreme Court justice. I mean, that's the only position where you're in for life. So if you get in, look at Justice Thomas, who's been there since 1991, 31 years. My knowledge, that's the longest one right now. But the idea of a public servant being in a job for 30, 35, 40 years, it's almost... maybe undemocratic is not the right word, but it doesn't make any sense, Bill, because nobody's that good to do a job for that length of time. I mean, nobody's that good.
That's right. That reminds me of Charles de Gaulle. Well, it wasn't Charles de Gaulle. He just used the phrase, but whoever invented it in France or wrote it in France, that the graveyards of the world are filled with indispensable men. We talk about people being indispensable. They spoke about Hoover being indispensable. He wasn't indispensable. He could be replaced. It was probably wrong of him to stay as long as he did. However, he did form the organization, and as I said before, it was probably a net positive. But yes, the terms of office should be shorter, simply because you need a new breath of fresh air. You need change. You need improvement. Now, obviously, change doesn't guarantee you'll get good change. You can get bad change as well.
Right.
And that has certainly happened. But it just reminded me when you talked about the years, I worked at the New York Times for a man who founded most of the Sunday Times. And if I recall the numbers, he served in exactly the same time period as Hoover and probably pretty close to the same years, because he began the Sunday department in the mid-1920s and left in the late 1960s. So it was pretty much the same career. His career and Hoover's were almost identical in time. Fascinating, the FBI, fascinating. They had terrific public relations. They had a terrific image. And I think one of the things that can be said is that the reason that Hoover was there so long is that people were afraid of him.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you next, you know, because he works at the It's up to the president, really, to appoint him. And so he would have been approved by Calvin Coolidge, I think, and died under Richard Nixon. That's a pretty long history. That's a pretty long timeline.
Yes.
And yeah, nowhere in between, you know, no, I mean, you would think that somebody in between would have said, maybe you've been there too long, Mr. Hoover, but I guess, you know, he doesn't, let me put it this way. He doesn't get, I think, like you say, Bill, he doesn't get a lot of credit for the things he did right. And he did a lot of things right. The FBI was a, I guess continues to be, maybe not as much, but was one of the most respected institutions in the world. I mean, that FBI
yeah.
show that was on TV for a long time, that is a very popular show around the world, not because it's a great show, but because everybody around the world saw the FBI as a very serious law enforcement organization, Bill, that most countries wished they could have, Bill.
Yes. Well, they probably still do. I mean, the FBI doesn't have the glamour today that it used to when it's been involved in several scandals, but there were a lot of important things that they did. It's remarkable to think that Hoover served through the Roaring Twenties, the Depression, the gangster era that accompanied the Depression, World War II with its counter-espionage against the Nazis, and to a certain degree against the Japanese, the post-war era, we were fighting the Cold War, and there were attempts to penetrate the United States, really, and then into the era of the 60s and the Civil Rights Movement. What a career. What things he saw.
Right. No, you're right, and he was in the middle of it all. That's the amazing thing. But let me just ask you a question. You mentioned Tom Wicker. Is that the same Tom Wicker, I assume it is, who wrote that book about Nixon? There was a book about Nixon written by Tom Wicker about 30 years ago. The name of the book is One of Us, where he actually
yes.
makes the case that Richard Nixon was a lot better of a president, that he was very much, for example, in favor of, he made the Great Society possible by not destroying it. So it's a very fascinating book, and I liked it a lot. And the author is Tom Wicker, and I thought that was a great, it's got to be the same man, I would assume.
Same man,
yeah.
And he was right. Look, I was not a Nixon photo. I mean, I was brought up to hate Nixon. You know, in those days, when I was in the Democratic Party, you were brought up to believe that Richard Nixon was the personification of evil. I mean, it was there was one Nixon, and he made this remarkable comeback from the presidential loss in 1960 against Jack Kennedy and the gubernatorial loss in California 2 years later. Many people don't recall that after Nixon was defeated for president, he tried to become governor of California, hoping that would be the beginning of a comeback, and he was defeated. And he issued that famous line, "You won't have Nixon to kick around any longer." And the fact is, they did, because he decided later to run for president, and he made it against
right.
Humphrey in 1968.
You know, Beto is hoping to do a Nixon. You know, you lose a close election, then you lose the next one, and then you make it on the third. So far, that's not working very well for Beto, Bill. But I think he's hoping to have his own strategy of the Nixon story. You know, you lose one, you lose the second, and you win the third. It's not working for Beto,
well,
but I think maybe that's what he's thinking.
It probably is what he's thinking. I mean, they look at comebacks, great comebacks in the past, and realize after a while there were very few of them. But Nixon
right.
was a fascinating character. I remember having a discussion in 1960 with Paul Douglas in Illinois, U.S. Senator I interned for. And he knew Nixon, of course. And he said, the problem with Nixon is he's a man who will arrest his enemies. Now, Nixon did not go that far. But that was the image of him, that he had a lot of capability. He was very knowledgeable, took his work very seriously. But he had that dark side. And there's no question that's what brought him down. It wasn't the Watergate robbery that brought him down. It was the cover-up. It was the fact that he botched everything afterward. Had he come out the day that Watergate was discovered and said, this has happened on my watch, it's my party, I take responsibility, and here are the things we're going to do to make sure this never happens again, he would have been a national hero, and the man who
yeah.
took responsibility. But instead, he started fighting and quibbling and lying, and he had these two guys, Haldeman and Ehrlichman, these two henchmen, and he, of mm-hmm. course, had the press, who hated him. And that, I think, in the end, was what he couldn't overcome. And he
right.
did take the right he took the right step in resigning, because that saved the country from going through an impeachment trial, which he might have lost. And then and he would have become the first president to be thrown out of office. But he did
yeah.
resign. He in retirement, he wrote some books. He stayed very, very active. Again, he's not a man I particularly liked, but I cannot deny the seriousness of the man in most cases. When it came to Supreme Court appointments, he was not very good. I mean, he had some of them turned down because they were just too mediocre. But he nominated one who became Chief Justice. I can't remember the name right now. But
Berger, isn't it? Berger?
But,
no, not Berger.
Rehnquist,
was it?
I think he did. Rehnquist, yes. I believe it was
yeah.
Rehnquist. I'm not sure. That could have been Ford who did that, but we'll assume it was Nixon. But his main area was foreign policy. That was the area he liked the most. He had Kissinger as Secretary of State. He made serious appointments. Whether he was right on foreign policy, well, in the end, he turned out to be wrong, because he went for detente, whereas Nixon mm-hmm. went for victory. And Reagan had some things on his side that Nixon didn't have on his side, and Reagan comes out as the champ in foreign policy because we won the Cold War.
Exactly. No, yeah. I think overall, of course, he will always have Watergate. I mean, his story will always include Watergate. But I've seen several ratings of presidents, and he is now like number 24, 25 among the great presidents. Again, not at the top, but certainly not at the bottom. And I think people are beginning to see him more in a more, maybe in a more proper way. So, I just brought up Nixon because of that book by Tom Wicker, a book that I liked a great deal, very interesting book. Well, Bill, I want to get back to current events, because there's one current event that is not very good, and that's the American economy. GDP went negative unexpectedly. You know, one of these days, I would like to meet the economist who gets it right, because it's always unexpectedly one way or the other. So I don't know how that happens, but this time it went from plus 6 to minus 1.4. It doesn't mean we're in a recession, because you have to have two of these negative ones, but it couldn't have come at a worse time for President Biden, Bill, to have a negative GDP. I mean, politically, it's just bad news. Whether it's a recession or not, we'll find out. But politically, Bill, this is terrible news for President Biden to have a minus GDP, Bill.
It certainly is, and especially at a time when we had hoped the economy would recover, that the that the disease would be gone forever. But he is, you know, I think one of the things we have to say about the president is, although many people don't want to talk about it, his manner, his halting manner, his obvious slowing down, I think is bothering people very much. And I think it affects their opinion of his work. I mean, you know, he gets up and he sometimes really starts slurring sentences. He is old. I don't know if he's capable physically of running again. And I think people see in him a president who would be better off in retirement.
Yeah, I think so. I think the image of him struggling, reading, it's just not a pleasant image. I mean, I feel sorry for the man, actually. You know, I feel sorry for him. I see him and I go, wow. I keep asking myself, if I was the first lady, would I enjoy that? I don't know how in the world she does. I mean, how can you enjoy seeing your husband or your father or your brother? It's got to hurt. I mean, if you're a family member, that's got to hurt, Bill.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We are living in difficult times, and I think the thing that has made it more difficult is this horrible war in Ukraine. Nobody really believed we would watch and see a ground war in Europe again. I mean, we thought we were finished with that in 1945.
Mm-hmm.
And here is a ground war that is growing by the day with very large casualties, with Russia involved, and with the world really, really breathless over the situation, because on the one hand, what Russia has done is terrible. On the other hand, Russia is a nuclear power, and you have to be careful. I think this is an area where I could give the president some credit. He has been watchful mm-hmm. over the role of Russia in it, and they are getting tougher and tougher in their statements, really to the point where I don't know how we can even deal with Putin after this, because the comments being made about him are brutal and correct. They are correct. And maybe they have made the decision at the White House level to say anything we want about Putin, regard him as expendable, and just wait out his tenure in Russia. They may feel it won't be very long, and then we can go back to doing regular business with Russia. But I do think some of our diplomacy during this period has been good. We have gotten the Germans to turn around and do the right thing, which is to eliminate or at least reduce their dependence on Russian energy, which was a dependence that was very dangerous right from the start, and a dependence that now is being eliminated. We have organized the coalition to give aid to Ukraine. It was probably too slow, and it may not be enough in the end. But I think that that it has been a pretty good policy. Now, obviously, right. we are now committed in Ukraine, and what I think should be stressed by the commentators and is not stressed enough by them is once the United States is committed to a struggle, we have to win. We've lost a few times, and it has hurt us, and hurt us terribly in the confidence that people have in us. But now that we are committed to Ukraine, that we're supplying weapons, we're probably supplying intelligence, our side has to win, and we have to pour anything needed, with the exception of American soldiers, into Ukraine. I think these new packages of $30 billion are perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. They're not a bargain, but they are well within reason to secure, if not an absolute victory in Ukraine, at least a draw where we don't lose anything. I mean, that would be the bottom line. We have to come out on top, and it must look as if Putin is defeated.
Right. No, I agree with you 100%, but there's one thing that concerns me, and that is all these, when we start turning politicians into, in essence, a battlefield, I'm a little bit concerned with mistakes. I'm not saying that Putin would give the order to attack the Speaker of the House and a bunch of members of Congress. But what if you had some hothead on the Russian side who decided to fire a missile, and all of a sudden, you have I'm not going to personalize it, but the Speaker of the House or other members of Congress killed in Ukraine, especially when they're meeting with the president who's a target. That worries me a little bit.
Oh, yes.
It's not putting men on the ground. I mean, it's not putting soldiers on the ground, but I think any Americans right now in Ukraine, you've got to really, you got to be careful. I understand the emotional, I understand the value of it, shaking hands with the president of Ukraine, but I'm a little bit concerned about how that could trip a mistake or somebody firing a missile, and then you've got a real problem, Bill.
Well, absolutely, and, the actions of a local commander can start a war. Now, I am assuming that the command and control system in place in the Russian army, the Red Army, restricts the use of nuclear weapons. Right? They must have some system whereby the nuclear weapon cannot be used without approval from higher headquarters. But there are an awful lot of other weapons that are being used, and they're being used very recklessly, very clearly directed at civilian targets. And I think the world is angry at Russia, not angry enough. But I'd like to see the situation 6 months from now. Now, if our side wins, it could actually help Biden very much politically, and that is something we have to take into consideration. The election isn't over until the end of Election Day. So this could have political ramifications in the United States.
Right, and the election he's probably worried about is 2024, assuming he runs. I think 2022 is something else. I'm just concerned about, I'm not worried about a nuclear missile, just any missile. being fired at an American delegation. I mean, some of these bombs are dropping in hospitals, they're dropping in lots of places, and you just never know what could go wrong. Let me bring up a couple of topics that are very important this week, I think, and you've written about it. The war on police that is going on in the country, these attacks on the police, a lot of policemen are being killed. Terrible news. And a lot of it, of course, is, I think, tied into that defund the police of a couple of years ago.
Oh, yes.
And the other big story, Bill, and this, I think you mentioned this morning when I think we exchanged a few messages this morning, but I think this war between the schools and the parents, this is one that is going to Election Day, and the parents are going to win this one, Bill. I think you're going to see a huge turnout of parents. This article in the AP that I sent to you, the number of school districts losing students is tremendous.
Oh, yes.
The number of parents,
I saw that.
Yeah, the number of parents doing homeschooling is tremendous. There's something going on out there, and the casualty of all of this is public education, Bill.
Oh, absolutely. I fully agree. Look, the Democratic Party engaged in an act of absolute genius when it went to war against American mothers. I mean, genius on behalf of the Republicans. I mean, that was the stupidest decision I've seen politically in a long, long time, to take on mothers and say you have no place in the schools. And of course, it resulted very clearly in the election of a Republican governor in Virginia. And I think that this parents' revolt is going to result in many more Republican victories around the country. Oh, yes, I think education, especially at the high school, junior high school level, is going to be one of the biggest issues in this country for years to come. And it will result, as it already is resulting, in smaller school attendance for public schools, and what we hope will be a growth of alternative schools, charter schools, private schools, although the private schools are as bad as the public schools in terms of ideology, but new schools can spring up. The education system may, I hope, become much more flexible, where you can send a child to all kinds of different schools, and I think it could revolutionize the country. It is very brave on the part of these parents to take on the educators and the educational establishment, but it is the story of the year.
It really is, and I think that's going to have a huge effect. And I also think, getting back to the police or the war against the police, I think the Democrats have lost this war in terms of public relations, because they went so far.
I think so,
now,
too.
To be fair, Joe Biden never said, "I'm in favor of defunding the police." He never actually said that. But he never said, "Stop it and stop saying that," either. So in a sense, he never said it. But the fact that he didn't stop it, I think, hurts him a great deal. Now he's doing it. Now he's trying to. But I think they're too deep in the hole on that one, Bill.
I think so. And also, remember that I think that people will give Biden the pass on the defund the police thing, because he has, ever since the mistake was realized, he said, "No, I'm not in favor of defunding the police." Okay, that's his current position. But there is a substantial part of the Democratic Party that is doubling down on defunding the police. They say, "Oh, it's absolutely right. It's something we should do. We should defund other parts of law enforcement." These are real fanatics, and experience will not change them. Their whole life is based on an ideology, which basically to them is a religion. And that ideology is not going to change. It's not going to change.
That's right. No, you're exactly right, and I just think they waited too long, frankly, to push back on it. Had he done that at the convention, had Joe Biden at his party's convention say, "Look, I want to make it very clear that I'm not in favor of defund the police, and these people are not associated with me," had he done it back then, maybe it would have had a different impact. But they let this go on too long, that it's become almost like the face of the party, fair or unfair. It's become the face of the party. Well, Bill, as always, I want to thank you for your time, for joining us. And I forgot to tell you that Joseph McCarthy, this is another interesting thing about this day, Joseph McCarthy passed away on this day back in 1954. I'm not sure if he passed away or he was killed in a car accident, but I saw that note today. That's another figure from the past. Maybe one day we'll talk about him a little bit more, Bill.
Well, we should. He was the most influential politician in a particular era, exceedingly controversial. And yes, it's a good subject to talk about.
Have a wonderful day, Bill. Make sure the Ministry of Truth clears everything that you write at Urgent Agenda. I don't want you to have any problems with the Ministry of Truth. I want to make sure that you keep your license at Urgent Agenda. I don't want them to pull it away from you, Bill.
I'm in touch with the Ministry of Truth right now, and they are guiding me as I speak.
All right. Well, I'm happy to hear that, because you always have to have a good contact with the Ministry of Truth.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Bill. Have a wonderful day, and we'll talk to you later.
Looking forward to it, Sylvia.
So much. Thank you so much. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, this whole thing about the Ministry of Truth, this sounds so un-American to me that it's mind-boggling. It's just mind-boggling. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.